what it's about. There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
We are recording live and podcasting all about Help for Huntington's Disease every week at 3:30 p.m. PST, 6:30 p.m. EST, 11:30 p.m. UK time. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, and I'll cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family about Help for HD. This is the HD View premiere show tonight. I'm so excited about it. Tell all your friends and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Thank you all for your support and interest in Help for HD programming. We now have more than 8,300 listeners. Welcome to the HD View premiere show, everyone. Tonight we are going to mix things up a bit with some music and fun, interspersed with some questions from our HDR community and discussion from our panel of prominent JHD HD community members, whom I will introduce to you shortly. But first, I'd like to start by introducing two incredible special people in my life, Clarice Miller and Dion Lefkowitz from DeShalmar. DeShalmar is a CDC 501c3 and has graciously stepped up to the plate to help our HD community by providing the platform for James Falvano's The Huntington's Disease Film Project, among other incredible programs. And I'd like to welcome DeShalmar to the show. Welcome, DeShalmar.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you here. Dion, how are you tonight?
I'm blessed. I'm blessed and highly favored. How are you?
We're good. So, Dion, you're co-founder of DeShalmar.org. Where did the name DeShalmar come from?
Well, DeShalmar came from, I have my four oldest sons, the names are Dion, Sheldon, Lavelle, and Marcel. So I took the initials of their first names and came up with DeShalmar. It's pretty simple,
cool.
But it was pretty, but it's unique.
Very unique. And I bet they're happy about that.
Yeah, very much so.
Well, Dion, tell us a bit about your background and what brought you here.
Okay, I grew up in Amityville, Went to Copaic High School, graduated high school. I did a year in college at Hudson Valley Community College and decided that I didn't want to go to school anymore. So I enlisted in the military. Three of buddies of mine, we was all going to go in on the buddy plan, and so we all took the test together to go into the military, into the Army. Lo and behold, they failed the test, and when the recruiter got around to my name, he was like, "Mr. Lieutenant, are you ready to join the United States Army?" And I was like, "Heck yeah, let's go. I'm ready to get out of here."
That's amazing.
So I joined the Army, but I came home on leave right after basic training. I came home on leave, and while I was in LaGuardia Airport, I believe it was, I heard a clicking noise. I said, click, 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 and I turned around, and I looked, and I seen this guy with this maroon beret and all of these medals and these straps and these spit-shine boots, and I was like, "What part of the Army do you belong to?" And he was like, "I'm airborne," without missing a beat, without missing a stride. He just kept moving, and I said, "Yo, that's what I want to do."
That's for me.
He impressed me to the max. I'm like, "Oh my God, this guy is like not smiling. He's all shined up. I don't want to be in the regular Army. I want to be in the 82nd Airborne." So
cool. Jumping out of airplanes.
Yeah, after leave, I signed up to jump out of planes. I had 35 jumps, and I loved it. I absolutely loved the military because it gave me some discipline, and the military actually saved my life later on, you know, in life. Because I had to go to the VA hospital some years back. For some issues, and it really, if it wasn't for them, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today.
So maybe is that where you kind of developed that desire to help veterans?
Exactly.
Okay, so where did your idea come from to do the veterans home?
Well, I was actually working at the VA hospital, but I was working. At a place called the Salvation Army. Everybody knows about the Salvation Army, but when you think of Salvation Army, you think of clothes and furniture or things of that nature, you know. But they actually have another entity where they have housing, where they house homeless vets. And so that was right on the VA property. And I was what's called a house manager or a shift coordinator, whatever you want to call it, but I learned a lot from that, and I remember Clarice telling me, "Why don't we start our own not-for-profit?" And at the time, I really, when she first mentioned it, I really didn't think, you know, that was the way to go, but after being at the Salvation Army and working there for a while and seeing the different needs of the soldiers or the vets, the vets, and how I would do something, how I would do it different, you know what I mean? How I wouldn't turn away somebody because they didn't have any financing to stay there. Could you imagine, this is supposed to be the Salvation Army, and if a vet didn't have funding from somewhere, they couldn't stay there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, your whole mission statement is garbage to me. You know what I mean? These people here have nowhere to go. They have no funds. They have nothing. And if they can't find some funding from either, like, social service or if the VA doesn't pick them up, the VA hospital, Veterans Affairs don't pick them up, they kick them out. They can't stay there. And that really aggravated me. I remember sneaking people in there. I remember people getting kicked out. And I worked the 12 to 8 shift, the 12 at night or 12 in the morning to 8 in the morning. And these guys that had gotten kicked out or whatever, I would let in at late. I would let them in, let them get a shower, feed them, give them a room and be like, yo, at 7 o'clock, I'm going to wake you up. You got to get out of here. You know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
So you really found that there was a need for a better solution for some of the vets.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Dion, what is your dream for DeShalmar? What is your dream?
Well, my dream for DeShalmar is, first of all, to hold strong to our mission statement. You know what I mean? Our mission statement is, I am my brother's keeper. We will never leave a fallen comrade behind, not on the battlefield of some foreign land or the battlefield of life. We will reach one. We will teach one. DeShalmar is commissioned by God to help any man or any woman reach their full potential in Christ, thereby reaching their full potential in life. DeShalmar is the good Samaritan. DeShalmar is the caring American. And so my dream, of course, I would like for DeShalmar to be a household name, but my dream for DeShalmar is that we just stand strong and we help as many people as we can, as far as the veterans, as far as domestic violence, as far as HD. And I'm going to tell you, I really didn't know anything about HD until, maybe 4 or 5 years ago when my partner, Clarice, I met her brother, and I've seen the changes that he was going through. And
yep. Dion, you got a big heart.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Clarice's brother. He's a good guy, you know, and I
yep.
hate for somebody like John to be going through something, and he's such a great person himself, you know. And I'm like, dang, man, there's nothing to help this guy. There's nothing out there that, you know, we can do. So Clarice said, yo, we can do something. Let's us do something. So I said, all right, I don't know much about it, so you're going to have to spearhead this thing. And then she met a couple of people, and then she met James with the film project. And, you know, that's what I want for this year, is for, number one, to get the vet's house up and running, and number two, to get the film project launched and on its way, and let James go all cross-country, whatever he has to do to get this thing filmed and done, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we just move forward and open up our reach out center where we can start funding different people with HD that can't afford their medication or is having problems putting food in the house or rent or whatever the case may be. You know what I mean? We want to have a bank account just to do that.
Yep.
Through our nonprofit.
Awesome. That's beautiful. Hey, let me introduce Clarice Miller. She's co-founder and your partner, Dion. Tell us, Clarice, welcome to the show. Actually, I wanted to say welcome first. How are you?
I'm good, Melissa. Thank you for asking.
Great. Well, tell us how you became involved with this organization with DeShalmar. I know you're partners with Dion, but what drew you to that organization?
Well, Dion and I have known each other for 10 years, and about 6 years ago, he came to me and told me about, no, I'm sorry, about 7 years ago, he came to me and told me about an idea he had for a product. And I thought it was great, and he told me the name DeShalmar, and, you know, I thought, wow, this guy's really going to do big things with his life. That's awesome, you know. And then about a year went by, and we were talking about just money problems and how, you know, there wasn't enough money for this or that. And I looked at him, and I said, well, whatever happened to that idea of yours? And he said, I don't know where to go next. So I said, okay, well, let me try and help you, and we'll try and figure out what to do. So I started trying to figure out, how do you do a patent? How do you incorporate a business? And we just started working together on our for-profit, which is DeShalmar Enterprises Incorporated. Our patent just issued this last month, and that was just a huge accomplishment.
Yeah.
And we knew that once this product started taking off, we wanted to be able to give back. So that's basically the foundation of the nonprofit came from okay, we've got this one product, and now we're going to add another product, which is my autobiography. And I said, well, you know, if we take proceeds from the sales of these products we have, we can start funding the nonprofit. So instead of waiting for it to take off, let's start it now. Let's get it ready. Let's put everything into place. Let's get our vision and what we hope to accomplish set up and ready. And when we start making enough sales where we can fund these programs, it'll really just kind of tie in together.
Right.
You know, so we've just been doing this for the last 6 years.
Awesome. And you know what? I definitely would like to have another show based around your autobiography, because I think that's a story that we need to tell. It's an amazing story. And everybody can go to www.deshellemar.org, look at the projects, and Clarice's autobiography is there. It's an incredible story. And so, Clarice, can you talk about your background just a little bit and what drew your heart to co-founding a nonprofit and doing the work that you're doing now for DeShalmar?
Well, my background, my mother had HD. And that was just, that was a hard struggle in itself, you know, just dealing with that. A lot of my life decisions were based on the what if, you know, what if I get older and I get sick too. And I didn't make a lot of the correct decisions that I should have. And I wound up in an abusive marriage. And I wound up having to take my children and going into a domestic violence shelter. And that is a very scary and hard thing to do.
Yep.
And when you're in it, you really don't know what to do or where to go. And because I had gone through it, I know the lack. Just like Dion says, he knows the lack with the VA hospital because he worked there. I know the lack with the domestic violence portion because I lived through that. You know, I know when September comes around, there's no money for school clothes. And I know that when Christmas comes around, there's no money for, you know what I mean? So I know what is needed. And that's kind of like what DeShalmar is. Like, there are other programs in place for vets, for domestic violence, for Huntington's disease. There are other programs out there. And they're wonderful. We can't knock anything that they do. They do an amazing job. But no one company can do everything.
Right.
So what DeShalmar wants to do is recognize where the lack is within the three components of our nonprofit and be able to fill in that gap.
Wow, that's huge. Okay, well, that's a whole nother show again. We've got lots to talk about. But when did you first hear about the film project, James Film Project?
I don't even think that James and I were Facebook friends. And someone posted the video he did, the first film that was in the Neural Film Festival to vote on. And I'm not going to lie. I don't watch all the videos that are posted. But something drew me to this video, and I started watching it, and I was like, oh, I'm voting for this. This is incredible. I've never seen anything like this. And I started voting on it. I started posting it. I put it on our nonprofit page. I put it anywhere I could. And then, of course, I added James as a friend on Facebook. And we just started talking back and forth, and it just grew from there.
Okay, that's awesome. I mean, I felt the same way when I saw the film. I just went, oh, my gosh.
Yes.
This is so poignant, and it's so true, and it just got me, you know, right in the heart. So that's what drew me to, you know, becoming a team member and advisor with the project. But tell us, what are DeShalmar's other projects?
Okay, we have, we have the three projects that are listed under our for-profit with 30% of proceeds going into the nonprofit. We have the Lockdown, we have my book, and we have the Muffin Kids Project, which is a children's book project, which we joined partners with Mike Fernald on. Then we have ongoing fundraisers, where we've set up for each different part of the nonprofit, we've set up T-shirts and hats and mugs and bags. And those products, 100% of the net proceeds go into the nonprofit. If someone comes to our website and they go into the store and they see a T-shirt that says Huntington's Disease Awareness Because It Matters, they purchase that. That money goes directly into what we've set up now is the HD Relief Fund. We're hoping to fund that account so that we can start helping the families with things that they need.
Wow, that's amazing. Incredible. So I think what we'll do right now is go to a little break. We'll do some music. Is there anything else that you want to tell us real quick about DeShalmar? I just ask that everybody please go to www.deshalmar.org. That's spelled DeShalmar.org. And look at the different projects that are happening. And it's just incredible what you and Dion are doing. I praise you guys, and I'm just amazed at the organization that you put together and the heart behind it. You're incredible people, and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Dion, you're awesome, too, and thank you so much. And 82nd Airborne! You rock.
That's it. Don't let me start singing some cadence.
Give me a cadence, Dion. Give me a cadence. Are you going to give me a cadence or what?
Oh, for real?
Yeah, do it.
Oh, my God. All right, well, you know I'm going to have to do an airborne one. C-130 rolling down the strip, airborne daddy gonna take a little trip. Jump up, hook up, shuffle to the door, jump right out and count to four. If my chute don't open wide, I got a reserve by my side. And if that one should fail me to look out ground, I'm coming through cause I'm airborne. All the way, airborne, every day. Super duper, paratrooper.
Okay, guys, I'm going to play some music. I'll break out here, take a break, and then I'll come back and do some announcements, and we'll go into some questions that some of our incredible super duper HD community people have for us. So here we go.
All right.
Reach out the space. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. We're back on the radio here. I want to give you some announcements, and then we've got some questions from our HD community. And we have a panel here tonight, and I'll introduce you to the panel. It's going to be a great conversation that we'll have. Upcoming episodes real quick. First of all, you're listening to Help for HD. This is the HD View. This is the premier show. This is Melissa, your host. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. We're recording live now, but you may listen again right after the end of the show. Again, our upcoming episodes, October 10th, we have a Help for JHD program, the JHD Natural History Study with Stacy Vick and Michelle Harrell at the University of Iowa. October 11, Help for JHD. Maddie Ellison with HDYO, HDYO will be on. And October 17, we have Dr. Malcolm Casale and Francis Saldana from the University of California, Irvine, to talk about stem cell research. And then October 24th, we have Help for HD with LaVon Goodman. We're going to be talking about the Public Library of Science HD treatment series. It's an algorithm for physicians and medical professionals. And then October 31st, happy Halloween, we're no show that night. I'm going to be out of town. We'll be back November 14th with Help for JHD and so on and so forth. We'll have more announcements to come. But I wanted to just give you a few pieces of information regarding the Huntington's Disease Film Project, and we have a face.org. We have a face.org, and the Huntington's Disease Film Project is the brainchild of James Falvano, and is supported by a team of prominent individuals within the JHD-HD community, whom I'm honored to be a part of. The components of wehaveaface.org are featuring the Huntington's Disease Film Project. We have education, resources, and information to bring awareness to our community about Huntington's disease. And one of the newest features on wehaveaface.org is the HD Alert page. Go to wehaveaface.org and click on Help for HD. There is an HD Alert link that we just added last week, James added. And James and Clarice noticed that there was a need for a place to post missing persons. Please, if you know anyone who has JHD or HD who has gone missing, first call your local law enforcement, EMS, and fire department, of course. But if you need additional support or you need to talk to somebody, please contact us at wehaveaface.org. Another very important feature at wehaveaface.org is on the Help for HD link or page is a link to the HD Relief Fund. It's another DeShalmar program. And if you go to the Help for HD tab on wehaveaface.org, click on the HD Relief Fund text. There's a little red text there, which will take you right to DeShalmar.org, the HD Relief Fund. And it's based on the feedback of the JHD-HD community. DeShalmar has instituted the HD Relief Fund. The HD Relief Fund Committee is comprised of individuals chosen by DeShalmar from the JHD-HD community. The mission of the committee is to raise funds and provide assistance to the JHD-HD community. Once the HD Relief Fund is launched, DeShalmar will provide specific guidelines for this program. The application and program details will be available very soon, and the HD Relief Fund will be awarded based on essential needs like medications, groceries, utilities, etc. And currently, DeShalmar is a CDC 501c3, and it is the only nonprofit organization aimed at providing these direct services to the Huntington's disease community. Don't forget the Help for HD at wehaveaface.org. Help for HD tab has many links and items to help educate and inform you. If you go to the site at wehaveaface.org, click on Help for HD, there's a plethora of links and information. The brochure is there. We have a face.org has a brochure now for the law enforcement. It's called On the Road Help for HD. And we also have an ID card there for JHD and HD individuals that you can put your picture in there, have your doctor sign it. It's something that we can use for identification for law enforcement, for medical professionals. It's very important to have that ID so that we can educate people as we go, which we're having to do. And Clarice Miller and James Falvano have done an excellent, amazing job at putting these programs together. So don't forget, go to wehaveaface.org, Help for HD. and check it out. It's really great stuff. And I wanted to give us one question out here. First, let me introduce our panel to you. We have James Valvano. Say hi, James.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me on this.
You're welcome. We have Clarice. Hi, Clarice.
Hello.
And we have Dion. Hello, Dion.
Hoorah!
Hoorah! Sue Wright from the UK is on.
Good day. I said good day because I've just returned from Australia, but I am in England.
Ah,
for you.
Very good. And we have John Monkmeyer. Hey, John.
Hi, everyone.
Okay, so we have an awesome panel tonight. And one comment that we had come in, and I'll read it to you, but I won't say names because I'm not sure if that's okay for her, that she wanted me to say her name. But she says, I've been thinking a lot about black or Afro-Americans and Huntington's disease. Is it more rare in the black community? Is it being mistaken for some other sickness? Or are blacks less likely to say that Huntington's is in their family? I'd like to get my mind working on how to get the word out to the black community about Huntington's and that it is okay to talk about it and not hide it because it will not go away. I've only seen one black person on all the online sites, and it has been me. So what do we do, and how can we get the word out to our black people?
Well, I mean, that's a fantastic question, and we thank the person for writing to us with that. Individuals across the world have even been told by their personal doctors that only males can get the Huntington's disease. I know that Sue can talk to that because she had made mention regarding that in the film. So it wouldn't be surprising if black individuals were misdiagnosed due to the lack of knowledge in some of the medical professionals. And we truly just don't know if a portion of the individuals within the medical field believe that white individuals are affected by Huntington's disease. I mean, I would say definitely it does affect across all ethnic, regardless. We know that HD does not discriminate.
Right, unfortunately.
Indeed, and I mean, the misdiagnosis isn't just an issue for black people, whatever the color of your skin. HD is misdiagnosed, sadly, especially if there's no family history, known family history. And we all know that there's a stigma associated with Huntington's, so some families try and keep it the secret locked away in the cupboard.
Yeah, and then we also have to think of, when it comes to, is it a cultural issue? Is it a taboo, or is it more that individuals, regardless, like you said, of skin color, are just being misdiagnosed? People are being
When I was in New York for the fundraiser for the Huntington's Disease Film Project, purely by coincidence, a family was staying in the same hotel. And the minute I saw the older gentleman, it was obvious to me he had Huntington's disease. But obviously, I didn't rush up to him and say, hello, you've got Huntington's. Later on, I did approach the family and say to them, I notice there's a neurological problem. Is it Huntington's disease? And they were absolutely so appreciative because, yes, their doctor had thought because his skin was black, he could not have it. But absolutely 100% sure he had Huntington's disease. So certainly I put my hand out in friendship to them. Unfortunately, they were off traveling around the world, and I haven't heard back from them yet, but I hope they will get in touch.
Yeah, I remember when Sue mentioned that. We went to pick her up at the hotel, and she said, you wouldn't believe, in New York City, and so it was really obviously sad to find another individual who has Huntington's disease, but so wonderful to know that we're finally meeting people of other cultures. I mean, we have still to reach out to the Asian community. Within the project, we have gotten multiple emails. And as everyone can see, we have the support of over 90 countries. But unfortunately, where we're, you know, finding that gap is, you know, with the Asian community too. And you know, what can we do to actually bring this about in the African-American community? I think, you know, going to your local community centers, even when you're out at the doctor's office, you know, ask them if they know of anyone else who might have, you know, been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. I mean, it's all about communication. I would say at least it's the beginning, or it could be a start.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, the main thing is we need more education and outreach.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we need to make sure that it's understood that this disease does not discriminate against any race, religion, or lifestyle, or age whatsoever. I mean, it runs in family lines. And so I think we just need to keep going. We're doing it now, but we just need to keep going. And that was a very poignant question. Let me break in here. We'll get some more music going, and we'll come up with another question. So if anybody out there listening has a question, please send it to our chat. It's on the page here. We'd love to answer any questions or discuss any topic that you wish to bring up to us. And here's another song for you.
Thank you.
guys. We're back on the air here. And we have another question that's kind of important, and it's something that I've actually thought about myself. I won't say, again, I won't say the name, but it says, here's the question. This may be a strange question, but here goes. Is it common for a person with HD to be somewhat normal or with it, somewhat normal or with it during the daylight hours and more out of it, or disoriented in the evening hours? Thanks. I've noticed with my own son that, you know, evenings can be very emotional, teary. Maybe he's exhausted. Maybe he's you know, had a trying day or whatever. But I've noticed that. What about you guys?
Definitely for me. Definitely for me.
Is it from fatiguing?
You know, I would say so. I mean, during the day, you know, we're on our computers, we're doing our thing. You know, I try to get as much exercise as possible in the pool and all that. But I can tell right around, well, it's 7:15 my time, it starts to be more of a physical thing for me, mm-hmm. where the right side of my body, more of my right arm, starts to, you know, pop, jerk. Mm-hmm. And then when I take the meds, you know, obviously it then makes me tired so that I can rest. But, yeah, I definitely can speak to that, too, that it is during the day, I'd say, you know, 20 to 30%. But when it comes time for night, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, that's when, you know, the right side of my body just doesn't belong to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that a lot of people...
Sue, I know you took care of your husband for the duration. Did you notice anything?
Oh, well, indeed. I mean, he always said everything had to happen at 10 a.m. precisely, because that was when he could function. And I'm sure it is the fatigue factor, because obviously with the movements, if people have the career to any significant extent, that's burning up so many calories, let alone trying to do things. So, and a lot of people will try and mask, as it were, what their movements were and try and make it into something more purposeful. So they're using a lot more energy just to function as normally as they can than we have to use. So definitely fatigue plays a major part in it. Also, Huntington's is a type of dementia, and there is scientific evidence of a sort of twilight dementia as well. Mm-hmm. So I've not actually heard anything of that related to Huntington's per se, but maybe it's something that we should try and explore.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly, I mean, my mum doesn't have Huntington's, she's got vascular dementia, and
right.
she suffers the twilight dementia. It's just as though the light switch goes off as twilight arrives.
Hey, John, you're quiet there. What about you? I know you took care of your wife for so long.
It's different, I guess, for everybody, and my wife's experience with it. She actually wasn't able to sleep very well in the beginning. And she ended up staying up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's melatonin is the chemical that lets you sleep. It's in turkey. And it comes from serotonin. And when your brain chemicals get out of whack from Huntington's disease, if you aren't making enough melatonin, you won't sleep. If you're making too much, it puts you right to sleep. And we ended up balancing it with Prozac, because that increases your serotonin, which actually becomes your melatonin. And without the chemical intervention, we didn't have the balance. But it's definitely more difficult. I think that the sunlight has something to do with your circadian rhythm and those things, and goes off with Huntington's and varies with everybody.
Did she get sunshine during the day, or...?
We live in a house with a lot of windows, so she mm-hmm. did. And I'm pretty sure she was definitely awake a lot more, because it does sap your energy. And I would say that the sunlight really made a difference in making her enjoy life a lot more. So nighttime was more sleepy time.
I know with my son, James, he is just having a heck of a time going to sleep at night. And he can't take the Prozac and those kinds of meds. I forget,
SSRI, which is
SSRI. Yeah, he just cannot take those meds. He just has really bad adverse reaction to those meds. So we're having a heck of a time trying to figure out how do we keep him up during the day and get him to sleep at night. It's just really difficult. But if anybody else has any ideas out there, we'd love to hear it.
I discovered that you can actually take melatonin, and there's a couple different forms of it, and I don't know if you'd be able to take that, but it puts you to sleep. And I think I took something called 5-HTP.
How about natural foods, like, you know, I think it was bananas.
Turkey has it.
Yeah. God knows I love having a nice turkey sandwich before going to bed.
Thanksgiving is coming up here pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're making me hungry. Okay, well, let me break here for a minute. We'll do a little music again, and then we'll mix it up here. So here we go.
Shine on.
Okay, sorry about that, the dead airspace, guys, but I ran out of my song. We have a caller, and if you'll give me a minute here, I'll bring everybody back on. Here we go. Caller, Deb?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you very much.
It's so good to have you on the show. How can they... you want to make a comment, or did you want to have a question?
Well, I'm not sure it's a comment or a question. I just wanted to ask, you know, what do you do when you're in sort of a gray area? My daughter has or is gene positive for HD. The COE has not, quote-unquote, diagnosed her as symptomatic at this point in time. She's 25. She's going to be 26 next year. Mm-hmm. I'm at the point where when she turns 26 in December, I'm not going to be able to cover her under my insurance.
Right.
I'm really worried about that because there's this big gray area between the time that she becomes symptomatic in their eyes, you know, to the point where she can get some assistance.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, she needs help. What do I do? Where do I go? Who do I turn to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't know where to go with this.
That's a very tough situation to be in. I think if she's relying on health care that's from Medicaid, then it's her own Medicaid after a certain age, and prior to that age, it would be the Medicaid of her parents. So
yeah, but they won't. They consider my income, and she lives with me, and she does show symptoms, but not enough that they will consider her to be disabled or to diagnose her at this point in time. So what do I do? Because we don't qualify with my income with her living with me for any type of assistance. And she's on...
So, Deb, when you say, Deb, that they don't say she's got symptoms, who are they? Is it an HD specialist?
Hopkins, Johns Hopkins, the Center of Excellence.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Are they considering symptoms as being chorea or other symptoms?
No, because you know for a fact that the chorea is the major one thing that they diagnose you as, according to the laws of Social Security and the guidelines that they follow. So they don't right now consider the cognitive issues. My daughter can't drive. She has no sense of where she is. You know, she cannot maintain a full-time job. She goes to school part-time. She works part-time, but she can't do more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like she does qualify to be pretty much fully disabled, though.
They won't consider that. I mean, there's not enough evidence for them to consider that right now. And, you know, I'm just trying to get her medical insurance, and Social Security just pretty much laughs at me. I mean, they, you know, I left their office crying because...
Oh.
You know, where am I supposed to go? They consider my
income. You just recently went there?
No, I went there a couple of years ago.
Okay, just to fill you in, what had happened to me, I had my own small business, and for upwards of 8 to 10 years, I always wondered what was wrong because I had the ticking restless leg is what they said it at
right.
the time.
Right.
As it went on, I realized that I had fluttering eyes. Don't ask me how to say the actual terminology right now. I basically went to my primary care physician. I did not go to a specialist center. I can only speak from my experience. I went to my primary care physician and told them my history, and they basically told me to go to a neurologist, and she gave me the name of a neurologist. If there was none of these bells and whistles and anything like that, the neurologist said, okay, we're going to do a CAT scan, an MRI, and a run of blood test. If she is physically showing what you're saying, what I would consider not able
to
drive.
Well, she's not physical. She's cognitively showing this. She's not. If you look at her, James, she looks fine. You would think there's nothing wrong with this child.
Right.
Here in the UK, what I usually recommend is for the more challenging cases that you should try and get an appointment with a neuropsychiatrist who's specialist in both of the neurological side and the psychiatric side, because of course Huntington's covers the whole range of symptoms, doesn't it? So
I have an appointment with a neurologist outside of the Center of Excellence. And his recommendation was that she go through neuropsych evaluation through an outside person, which
exactly.
is fine, you know, but where is that going to get me to? Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's very interesting how it works. I know, like, Dr. Alan Rubin meets both the psychiatrist and the also neurologist side of things, and he's really good at helping his patients. He's in Marlton, New Jersey. He wasn't my wife's doctor. But I ended up, my wife basically became symptomatic around the time my son was born, and she was working as a nurse. So they asked her to leave her position, and she just resigned. And at that point, she had no medical coverage because she resigned. They had wanted her to become a director of nursing. So she was kind of left to the whims of a country in which you don't really get medical coverage too easily. And it took us 5 years later for her symptoms got really bad. And I went to an HDSA meeting and heard in there that if you hadn't worked for 5 years, you weren't able to receive Social Security disability or whatever. And I was like, what is Social Security disability? So the next day I called the Social Security office. And that phone call became the beginning of the application for my wife being disabled. And I just explained to them what was going on and her level of disability. And I never had any problems going through the system. Many people have to go through the system several different times. And they had asked me, in fact, to find doctors to document things and other things like that. So it's just, you get into the process of being evaluated for disability, and it either goes in your direction or not. And you get a doctor on your side who really knows how this stuff works, like Dr. Rubin, and I imagine that that would help. But we just ended up going through on our own without really having that sort of support and did not have any problems from the government whatsoever, because they called the 800 number, which is the general Social Security line. I didn't go to the local office.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you can look at someone and tell that they're physically disabled, but when you look at an HD person, you don't always know that, because there are other symptoms and there are other things going on there that you can't visibly see until they get into the later stages. So, you know, that's where, you know, there's this gray area. And I'm not asking for anything. I'm asking to be able to continue to pay for my daughter to be on my health insurance where I work. But I need doctors to qualify her for in order for me to do that.
And that might just happen with new neurologists that you'll see.
Maybe, but, you know, maybe not.
Let me break in here real quick. Hey, Deb, I know I think I sent you some links. I don't know if you got them or not from HD Lighthouse.
I did.
And the reason I'm mentioning it again is Phil Hart was on my show a while back.
And I contacted him. I did.
Oh, you did. Good. Any
but
luck with that?
He hasn't responded. No.
Okay.
No.
Well, I can probably reach out to him and see if we can get you two connected, because he has a whole procedure of how to get your HD person on disability. There's definitely a method to it, and it has to do with the dementia aspect of the disease. And because, you know, Huntington's disease
is a frontal dementia, similar but not the same as, you know, Alzheimer's and that kind of thing. There is a, I don't know if it's called a loophole, but there is a criteria for a disability that a person can be qualified. And that's all about all I can really say about it, other than if you can talk to Phil. He's an expert on that, and he would be able to advise you. And, you know, another thing I'd like to say just real quick is the fact that, you know, we are a panel of HD community members. We're not professional medical professionals, doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, and that. So, you know, what we're talking about today is, you know, first seek out medical attention and psychological and psychiatric attention before, you know, you do anything else. It's always good to have your doctors on board with what you're doing. And, you know, we're not those medical professionals, but we can just tell you from our own experience what we've come across, what we've had to do. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do, is help people who just need guidance, basically.
I understand totally what you're trying to do, and I've been through the gamut, and, you know, I don't want to go there. But at any rate, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I just appreciate you listening.
Oh, you're welcome, Will.
Oh,
we love
you've made very valuable points there, Deb. People do need to think about, and I know on the sort of dementia issue, it's not to do with Huntington's, but with my mother, she seemed so wonderful. She could hold a conversation, but nobody bothered to check if what she was saying was actually real. So she was articulate and plausible when she had actually quite severe dementia. So people really need to stop, look, and listen.
Right, I agree. I agree. All right,
and
thank you all.
Again, Deb, I'll try
doing.
To make that connection for you, and we'll get you two connected. He's got some amazing a set of directions, a set of criteria.
Yeah.
I don't know if you probably saw it online there, but
absolutely.
I know that he's helped quite a number of people with that article that he's written, and personal contact with him would be really beneficial to you. But thank you for joining us today, and I appreciate the questions that you've had. And just real quick, too, my son is on state disability because he didn't qualify for federal as well. Unfortunately, you know, he has other conditions, and we were able to get him on the state disability based on Addison's disease. So he's not even on disability based on Huntington's, so...
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy how our system works, but if we can find the loopholes or the criteria that actually help us get our loved ones qualified, we need to do that. So,
all right.
Yeah, thank you, Deb.
Thank you all.
And
thank
we'll
you,
break
Deb.
For some another song here, and then we'll be back in about 4 minutes. So here's Rihanna.
Please don't stop the music.
We're back, and I just have a – I got an email a few days ago, and it was something that I thought would be a really good thing to put on the show. The question is – and he's a caretaker of his daughter who's 31 years old. She has HD, and he says, while she is still in early stage – now, this might help Deb, too. I hope Deb is able to listen. If not, well, I'll send her the link and she can listen again. But so he says, while she is still in early stage, there definitely have been changes in the last year since she moved back home. She no longer works, and while there are many things she still can do for herself, there are many things that I have to do for her. Do you have any idea of what type of support function I should seek for myself? I don't think a psychologist would be helpful, since I don't think the challenges I have would be helped by talking about how difficult this is. A friend of mine suggested a place that might teach techniques for dealing with the frustration and stress. Our local HD support group deals with issues at a group level, like how to prevent injuries and how to travel and news on research. Do you know what other caregivers do in the way of getting their own support? This is a really good question. Anybody want to touch that? Okay, well, what I would say is I know from my own experience, and, you know, we have a support group. I started a support group a while back, and that has been a great help to be able to be proactive and doing something for my HD community. Gives me an outlet, a creative outlet. Started the radio show. That was another creative outlet. It allows me to learn and teach at the same time, which is just really incredibly empowering to do that. And so basically what I did is I wrote him back and I said, you know, support of the financial kind, support of the financial kind. Hold on, let me grab my list here. Oh, cool. Support of the financial kind. Well, I was finally able to get my son on SSI disability. It is a very small amount. I'm working as a caregiver, a care provider for my son through a state fund program, funded program called In-Home Support Services, where I belong to the Domestic Workers Union. And I said, check your county social services about that. But support of the psychiatric or psychological kind, and again, I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, but the type of support I have found that helps me most is, you know, conversing with other caregivers who are dealing with the same issues. An HD psychiatrist may be able to give you tips and tricks on how to function day to day with the progressing decline. But however, they're really difficult to find, and I've not had a good experience yet with that. But I said, what I can tell you from my own personal experience is that educating myself about the stages of HD and talking with those who have gone before us have given me the most power to do this every day. Educating people I come into contact with has been another empowering activity. And respite for yourself, this is a hard one, people with that are caregivers. If you can take a few hours a week for yourself, that is not being selfish. It's what we need to rejuvenate ourselves so that we are good and strong and sane for our aged ears. You might need to, you know, ease the concept to your loved one about it. Maybe you could find someone who that person knows, that they trust. You can ask a relative to come over for a couple of hours, and so that you can just get away. It's best not to leave our HD people alone at any time. That's kind of my advice. Anybody else have anything on that?
Yeah, well, certainly on the support for the carer issue, having been a provider of online support for well over a decade, and a user of it before that myself, I can't speak too highly about just communicating with others who have already been down that road, are going down the road at the same time, for helpful hints to try and keep your sanity, because it is a very hard disease to live with, most certainly.
Yeah.
And you can find help from very bizarre sources as well. Unfortunately, my husband became quite violent, and I ended up being referred to a group for women who'd suffered domestic violence. And that group, even though it was nothing to do with Huntington's disease, actually provided me with so much support and enabled my self-esteem to improve.
I wonder, too, if there's domestic violence involved with HD. I'm sure that Clarice, you could probably talk about that. I don't know if you know of any domestic violence people that have the HD in their family.
I really don't. I have gotten a lot of questions on Facebook if I know those statistics, which I don't. I have had people privately tell me this is the situation, this is what's going on, and my husband has HD. So I'm sure there are a lot of cases. And it's just, it's very hard to, I mean, how do you tell someone, well, domestic violence is okay because of the HD? It's not.
I know.
You know, so it's kind of, it's very hard, because then you get to the point, well, now what do you do? If I'm in a situation where I'm being abused by my husband, but he also has HD, so it's like you kind of have to get someone to step in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, is it because of the HD? Is it because they were already abusive before the HD set in? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't have those answers.
Or is there a propensity for it because of what it does to the brain, you know?
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
Good question.
Yes, I think the brain damage causes problems with aggression, most definitely.
Right.
And yes, we can excuse some of it because of Huntington's, but you also have to try and make sure the person is accountable for their actions, because they have to live in the real world. So I used to say to my husband, you know, hit me again and I'll call the police. And he would actually stop.
Yeah.
So he had a degree of control.
You had the boundaries set up.
Well, yes.
Absolutely.
With a person's mental health is directly proportional to the amount of control they have. So as you lose control with Huntington's, they're very unhappy, and that's part of them lashing out, is that lack of control. So when you're
good point.
Caregiver position, you try to hand as much control as feasible to the person you're caring for, so that they don't have that super high level of frustration. But
right.
As the caregiver yourself, $90 billion is saved in America by caregivers, because that care doesn't get provided by professional services. It gets provided by the best services, which is the family. But
right.
We as human beings, our support structure is our family, our friends, our coworkers, our churches, synagogues, and it's those relationships. And every single one of those relationships are completely challenged by being a full-time caregiver. At work, generally, you don't necessarily have the same support of family, because it's not attractive to come in to a difficult situation. And your friends, if we're looking to have fun, aren't as friendly as they might be generally.
Mm-hmm.
So the support just disappears. And that is where one of the greatest unmet needs will always be in the Huntington's community, is to find the support for caregivers and their families.
Right.
And that's one of the greatest services that is done out there.
Yeah. About a year ago, we went through something very similar with my brother John, who's now in the later stages of HD, and he's in a group home close by. My parents are up there in age, and if I said that too loud, they'd probably hit me. but my brother John, we had to move him in here where I'm at now, actually. And when he wouldn't get his way, we have to take into consideration that my brother was one of the most independent people I have ever met in my life. So throughout the, like John was saying, direct reflection from mental, emotional. When he wouldn't get his way, he would throw lawn chairs. He would throw stuff in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It touches home in probably many, many homes. It's just, you know, like John said, the family support, and then like even Sue said, knowing the boundaries, because then we would have to step in and say, you'd have to stop that, John. And, you know, it would put him back into the place, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But now, being later stages, those behavioral issues have gotten very minimal.
I just got a comment from Jane off the chat that I wanted to put up here. We were talking about is it normal for sleep disorders and that kind of thing. And her comment was, sleep disorders are quite common, and I suspect there is little help for this issue. At Carly's longest spell without sleep, it lasted 68 hours. And she had no ill effects from this, which is a medical questionable situation. She said she tried melatonin sleep aids, but they were negative. It seems like every HD person is different in some way, and so maybe if it doesn't work for one, it might work for another. I don't know. It's always good to check with your doctor and see what other options are available. And let me break in here one more time. We're going to have another song, and then we're going to come back and ask one more question with our panel. And then after that, I think we're going to be out of time. So appreciate everybody being on the call here. And we will hear Alice. My son is here, and he says, "What happened to Depeche Mode?" I'm like, "Oh, I couldn't upload that one in time." But anyway, we have one more question, and then I think we're probably going to be out of time for today. But here's the question. It's anonymous. It says, and I think Sue can help us with this one. I'm really scared that my father is going to choke on his food. We make sure his food is prepared the right way and feed him like the doctor said to. Does anyone know any another way that is safe and easy to feed someone who has a hard time eating with HD.
Right. Well, obviously it's a major issue because of the coordination problems. I was a speech and language therapist in my former life, and I always recommend that anybody should, with any choking problems, swallowing difficulties, must be assessed by a speech and language therapist skilled in dysphagia, that's D-Y-S-P-H-A-G-I-A, which is the whole issue of swallowing, so that they can assess the whole process and advise on the consistency of foods that are safest, sitting positions, etc. And ideally, that person would be part, the speech and language therapist would be part of a team with a dietitian as well, who could advise on nutritional aspects as well.
Mm-hmm. Is it just food?
Yes,
is it
it's
water
very
too?
Frightening. Pardon?
Is it just food or is it water too that we need to be concerned
about?
Well, liquids?
Liquids actually cause even more problems because you can't control them in the mouth. So a lot of patients with HD end up having their fluids thickened. To the extent that often they don't actually, like a cup of tea, they don't actually drink a cup of tea. It is spoon-fed because, as I say, you can't control a liquid in your mouth. And certainly if you have solids and liquids in a mouthful, that can cause problems. So just mashing food so that the gravy is mashed in with the potatoes should reduce the risk to some extent as well.
Yeah. Golly.
You know, there's a website I was just looking, which everyone you guys might already know. It's called the Speech Language Hearing Association. And
it talks
about Huntington's disease and tips on actually helping the individual who
Can
may
you
have
post
swallowing
that link
issues.
On the chat?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm going to do that right now.
You know what? Jane has another thing that she wants to share, but we're out of time. So maybe we can have it for our next show, our next HD View. I'm going to go ahead and close off the show. We're getting ready to go off. I'm going to play Joe Shavira's Heaven's Eyes. Joe Shavira is my dear friend here in Central Coast, California, who's donating a portion of his proceeds from his CD to the Huntington's Disease Film Project. So I want to go ahead and play his song, and we're going to get ready to close off the show here. And thank you, everyone, James, Clarice, Dion, Sue, and Jonathan. Thank you so much for coming on and, you know, spending this time with us, helping us with the questions, and appreciate all that you're doing. You're amazing people. I'm so proud to be your friend.
Thank you.
And just thank everybody.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, this concludes our show. I'm just going to play the song. It'll just play for a couple minutes, and then it'll go off the live portion. But I just want to conclude the live portion of the show and thank everyone for an informational, inspirational, and fun program. We had fun today with the music. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in to the HD View. You can reach me at helpforhd@yahoo.com. Please send me your requests, questions, or content for content about programming. And we'd love to do another HD View show if everyone likes this format. Also, let's see, I wanted to give you – oh, now it's left me. I wanted to give you – hey, Clarice, can you give us your website and your email in case anybody wants to send you a request or questions or anything?
Sure. It's DeShalamar, DeShalamar.org.
Okay.
And my email is Clarice@lockdown.com.
Okay. And – can we give out your phone number, or you don't want to do that?
No, you can do that, sure.
Okay.
It's,
phone number,
the office.
Yeah, go ahead.
631-630-6222.
Okay, that should be easy to remember. And please go to wehaveaface.org and go to deshalmar.org. Wehaveaface.org. You can click on the relief fund there. Help for HD link is there. All that good information is there for everybody to utilize. And also, if you have any special requests or concerns, anything, just let us know. Give me an email at helpforhd@yahoo.com, and we'll go from there. So we're off the live. Here we go. Okay, so, guys.
That was really nice.
Heaven's eyes. I went to bed last night thinking of you, knowing I saw heaven's eyes. I could see the way I felt before. Yes, I know this must be more.
guys. That was Personal Jesus. Love that song. My son, James, suggested that we put up the music, and I'm so happy he did. So props to James, Bergsall, Jimbo. Thank you. Love you. And this concludes our show tonight. Hope all of you enjoy it, and I think we're going to do this again. Give me send me a note at helpforhd@yahoo.com. Let me know what you think. Give me some ideas. Maybe we can add some of your comments. And we'll talk to you next week, and have a great night.